extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by AT&T 5G. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Charlie Davies, Matt Doyle. The 26-man roster for the U.S. is out. We know who is going to Qatar. There are some surprises. There are some shocks, namely Zach Steffen, not in the team. No, not in the three goalkeepers, not there at all. No Ricardo Pepi, no PFOC, no Areola. They're not
that's
there.
It.
But Haji Wright is there.
Yeah, that's the surprises. You got them all, Weavey.
Really, there's really not that many.
We were right there in your wheelhouse, man. You would start doing a list. It was like, oh, he's going to get that.
It's not as long as I want it to be.
Wait a minute.
Just going up and down the roster, trying to find reasons to be frustrated or upset. I can't really find them. Doyle and I were talking about this as we watched, Charlie, but I'm curious what your thoughts are. 26-man is out for Greg Berhalter. What are you thinking about?
I think I'm not really too shocked about anything, although I will say, you know, Zach Steffen caught me by surprise because I thought even if he's not the one, that he'd be in the top three. He's playing consistently at Middlesbrough. And then I think I'm just happy that he went with a striker who's a little bit different in that pool. And it was either Haji Wright or Jordy Pefok. And I'm glad that he made that decision to choose one. And I think he went with the more mobile one in Haji Wright. Even though Jordy Pefok is playing consistently in the Bundesliga, Haji Wright is in form. He's scoring goals. And him and Jordy Pefok have a different profile than Jesus Ferrer and Josh Sargent and Jordan Morris.
I'm going to go from 0 to 60 when it comes to like the tactical nerdery and reading the tea leaves from this real, like this should be like segment three in this show, but I'm just going to say it here. No Steffen. And we know that Berhalter has rated Steffen because of his ability to play out of the back with his feet. Sometimes it's an alleged ability, but that is the calling card. And then the inclusion of Morris and Wright, who, as Charlie said, Wright is a super mobile number nine. Morris still has that elite speed. We tracked it with the second spectrum this year. Like, he has not lost that after his injuries. This looks to me more like a team that is going to play on the counterattack. I think the U.S. were at their best in qualifying against Mexico. And while they played some good ball in those games, they were actually playing against the ball a little bit more than they did in basically any other games under Berhalter. And this squad, the way it's put together, the decisions he made on the margins, the decision he made, clearly the big decision he made in goal, suggests that, okay, we're going to be comfortable being a little bit more traditional U.S. team, and that we're going to absorb and we're going to try to create space in behind. And then we believe that we have the guys who can hurt you in that space in behind.
What do you make by him saying, and this is Greg after the announcement, at Brooklyn Steel, of course, in Brooklyn, New York, we're a high pressing team that uses the ball. That's like straight out of Greg's description dictionary.
Mm-hmm.
Does that jive, Doyle, with what you're thinking, or is that just him saying what he always says?
Not with at least one player on this roster.
Go ahead.
Tim Ream, that's not his bread and butter. He's not a defender at this day and age made for high press. That's just not – you're not going to get the most out of Tim Ream if you're expecting him to play high up the pitch and defend one-on-one or get to end line if Anthony Robinson is bombing forward and all of a sudden there's a loss of a ball in the transition game. Now he's isolated and has to cover that space. You're going to get torched. Tim Ream is great sitting back right on top of your goalie in a deep back line and building out of the back or playing, you know, balls between the lines. He's great if you're talking about a defender getting on the ball and having possession and picking up passes given time. However, Greg is saying, hey, we're going to be high pressing. So it's kind of like against England, you don't do that. But against Wales and Iran, you do that. And so that's when you put Tim Ream into the team.
So I think it's the answer is a little bit. It's like all of the above, right? Because like everybody, like every good team has to have, you know, three or four different looks that they can throw at you in games that matter. And the U.S., I think we've seen three of them. We definitely saw three of them in qualifying. The one that we saw the most of was the, you know, we're going to press high and disorganize you with the ball. The pressing I thought was promising. The disorganizing you with the ball wasn't always there, wasn't often there, I will say. But that's okay, because like I just see this and I think like, okay, that is not actually going to be plan A for this U.S. team. This U.S. team is going to sit and absorb. And I think, you know, again, I went 0-60. I took us too far down the tactical rabbit hole, right from the jump. We should probably talk more about the 26 guys who made the cut, but it was hard for me to think of anything else as I saw this team being put together.
By the way, Antonio Banderas is in the YouTube chat right now. No, probably not that Antonio Banderas, but he does have a lot of emoji-based takes on Roldan, Johnson Morris, and Haji Wright. We're seeing what you're writing.
Moore is also a surprise.
Yeah,
he is a surprise. A huge surprise.
Let's take people. There's some people listening on podcasts here on the Extra Time feed. If you don't listen to Extra Time, you're watching on YouTube or Twitch right now. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, Monday and Thursday, we'll have the full expansion draft preview. On Thursday, we also had our MLS Cup review this week as well. So your goalkeepers, there are three of them, as you might expect. Matt Turner is number one. Greg Berhalter said he is the number one. But there is a health question here. Carabao Cup on this Wednesday, November 9th. Turner did not participate for Arsenal. Sean Johnson, Ethan Horvath are the other goalkeepers. There in the defense, center backs, Aaron Long, Walker Zimmerman, the presumed starters, Tim Ream, Cameron Carter-Vickers make this team. No McKenzie, no Sands, no EPB in this group. Then five fullbacks, Anthony Robinson, Serginho Dest, those are your presumed starters. DeAndre Yedlin, Joe Scally, and Shaq Moore. As you said, Charlie, Shaq Moore, a bit of a surprise. We'll talk more about that one. Thought maybe Reggie Cannon would get that spot if they were going to go to that three-man back line. He's had experience at right back as well as in the three. Your midfield, Tyler Adams, Kellen Acosta, Weston McKennie, who is getting back to full health here. Yunus Musah, Brendan Aaronson listed as a midfielder. Luca De La Torre, who's apparently healthy now but not really playing in La Liga. A little bit of a surprise there. And then Christian Roldan is there as your seventh midfielder for the Vibes. Your forward line, starting with the wingers, Christian Pulisic, Gio Reyna, Tim Weah, Jordan Morris, and then your center forwards are Jesus Ferreira, Josh Sargent, and Haji Wright. Let's start with this, Charlie. Haji Wright, he's got 9 goals in 12 games in Turkey. He's been in the best form of any of the number nines for the U.S., though a number of them have been in good form, Sargent among those. So, why him? Why him over Pepe? Pepe was the one I felt like, yeah, he started 8 games in World Cup qualifying. He made the commitment early on. Greg seemed to trust him, not there. PFOC trusted him less, but is scoring goals in the Bundesliga. That matters. On form, says Greg, Haji Wright is the guy. Haji has played 3 games with the senior national team. He scored against Morocco. That's his single goal.
Hey, I'm trying to really take a deep dive into the strikers. And so when I look at Haji Wright, I was very high on him coming into the summer friendlies against Uruguay and Morocco. I thought, okay, from just watching highlights of him playing in Turkey, he's really intriguing just with his potential and his pace, his ability to score those goals and making those deep runs. He's got a bigger frame. I think his pace, he looks pretty pacey. I mean, not like top speed, but good enough speed to cause havoc. And he didn't take his chance with the opportunities that he was given in terms of how he played. He looked a little sluggish, a little slow. You can boil that down to a number of reasons, a number of factors. But ultimately, you felt that Greg moved off of him. So after his comment saying, hey, I expected more from him, to me, that was, he had his chance. Now he's out. He's in the back seat. He's on the outside for sure, looking in, and hopefully he can play his way in. But he's behind now. He's back in the in terms of how many guys are there to take that spot. Josh Sargent was in form, scoring goals, killing it. But then Timu Pukki came into the line, back in the lineup. He was injured, and now Josh Sargent moved out of that center striker position and being the center guy for Norwich City, and his production has dropped a little bit because he's not the go-to guy anymore. So then I thought, okay, maybe Josh Sargent isn't going to be the guy for the U.S. men's national team now, because now he's playing out of position and he's not as effective, nowhere near as effective as a winger as he is as a center forward. Then you look at Ricardo Pepi. That's the one that I'm trying to understand, because he makes the loan move to get more playing time to make sure that he is going to Qatar, and he's been producing. So you figure, okay, he's playing in the Dutch top league. He's scoring goals. He's playing every week. He's defending. His team's not great, but he has to work both sides of the ball, has to really focus on defending, which would, I think, translate well in the U.S. Men's National Team group for the World Cup, because you have to do both sides of the ball, the work on both sides of the ball. And in a lot of cases, your defending is going to lead to attacking chances. So I figured, sign him up. He's done. And I look at this roster. I knew Jesus Ferrer was going to be called in regardless. But he hasn't shown in the past 4 or 5 months anything that would scream, I'm the U.S. nine, because I'm playing off the defender's back shoulder. I'm stretching back lines. He's checking far too deep, more like a 10. And in some cases with FC Dallas, he looked like an 8. So now looking at the roster for the strikers, you know, I know he mentioned Tim Weah can play on both sides and up top. We haven't seen him up top. We all would love to see what Tim Weah looks like as a center forward, but he hasn't been used there. Jordan Morris has shown flashes in the past before his most recent injury. And you'd say, oh, I like that. But he hasn't looked in form with Seattle. So that one's a surprising selection for me. But ultimately, I'm positive. I'm optimistic of Haji Wright. Of all the center forwards, I think Haji Wright, for me, has the biggest upside because of his ability to hold up the ball, get into the box. He's scoring at will in Turkey right now, and I think he makes more deep runs than the other options.
If we're playing on the counterattack, I could see Haji Wright.
Yeah, which I expect us to do maybe outside of Iran. Because no. I think Iran will sit back more.
Interesting. I think they will. I expect Wales will sit back more as well. But there are different ways to unlock that. But this is, you know, I tweeted it out before. We're going to do the same thing. We're going to get hung up on choices 21 through 26 on this roster. And I understand why, because that's where the drama is. Everybody knew who the first 20 players on the roster were, other than Zach Steffen. I think that was a surprise, but everything else was pretty clear cut. And the point I want to make, the point I was making to Anders and Weeby before the show, is like, we didn't see even once during qualifying, we didn't have Pulisic, Reyna, Weah, Musa, Adams, Jedi, Dest, Zimmerman, Turner, Weston McKenna. We didn't have all of those guys healthy and fit and on the field at the same time, not even once during World Cup qualifying. Everybody focused on how young a team this was during World Cup qualifying, and that was, I think, appropriate. But also, the U.S. dealt with a ton of injuries, and they've had a bunch of injuries over the past couple of months, but other than the center backs with Miles Robinson and Chris Richards still out, everybody seems to be getting fit at the same time. And so I think that is actually the bigger story at this point for the U.S., 2 weeks away from our first game, than the decisions that Berhalter made at the end of the roster. And you can see, we put if you're watching on YouTube or Twitch, you know, we put the projected roster up and then roughly projected formation. It's like, that's the MMA midfield, man. We're going to have Musa, McKennie, and Adams, barring, you know, injury and training, we're going to have those guys fit and available. We're going to have Pulisic and Reyna. Pulisic played his best game in months today. Reyna is starting finally for Borussia Dortmund. Timmy Weah is playing really good ball in France. So Berhalter is suddenly going to have depth and flexibility to the extent that it doesn't really matter who he picked for the 22nd man on the roster. It doesn't matter that Christian Roldan is there over Malik Tillman, because with these guys fit, Tillman wasn't going to play anyway, and I don't think Roldan's going to play anyway. I'm happy for everybody who made it, and I'm bummed for the guys who didn't. But the bigger story in all of this is that, holy crap, the U.S. is like 90% fit, and we have not seen this literally since 2017.
12 days until Wales, the opener for the U.S. at the World Cup. Obviously, England and Iran after that one. I got some comments here on YouTube. BS says, we're bleeding the youngsters while bringing in some vibe guys like Morris, Roldan, and Ream. It's a balanced squad. Now, it's been about a year since Tim Ream has been there. Roldan and Morris, a bunch of folks in here saying they're super happy for those Seattle guys to be there. Always so supportive. Walker Zimmerman is saying that as well right now, and the media availability that comes after all of this. And, of course, we have the haters in the chat as well who are not happy about that. Strike 11, no Pepe, makes sense. Whereas P-Fox says Jonathan Chavez, that is going to be the positional group, I think, that naturally, as it has been for the last year and a half, 2 years, and you might even go further back than that, that's been the positional group that's gotten the most run as far as headlines. Who should be there? Why isn't this player there? Who's in form? Oh, God, nobody's in form. Oh, God, everybody's in form. Now how do we choose from them? Yeah, Ryan Clausen. Gotta love seeing these Sounders in there. Great choice. They do more
why,
than four.
Why do we have three right backs? Why?
Yeah.
Why, oh, why?
So
if you're going to have an extra spot on the field, you're going to give me an extra right back?
Yeah.
That for me is...
That's the weird...
Especially when Scally could play there too, no?
That's Scally's preferred position.
I was going to say, he's a natural...
Natural right back, so playing in the left.
My guess is that... It's kind of an audition between Moore and Scally to see who can back up Robinson.
Oh,
more
don't
adequately.
Give me auditions in a World Cup. You can't.
I mean,
give
what,
me
what else? What else are you gonna do?
There's no test, so yeah. It can't be an audition.
Sammy Vines goes down, and he wasn't exactly locking it up either. So
these are the moments that kind of just bug me a little bit. I know that they're not expected to play, but. In case of plan B, plan C, plan D, you never know. Injuries, red cards, whatever. I would have liked to see either one more winger, and you could throw Tillman in there. I mean, he scored tonight for Rangers. Or give me a PFL. Give me a Pepe. Give me another striker option.
I would have taken a fifth center back. I would have, if for me, the last
McKenzie,
guy
would have been
I would have actually gone with Sands because he could
Sands.
He could play center back and he could play D mid. And the guys who are most likely to pick up red cards and injuries are your defensive midfielders. So I would take Sands because he comes as your fifth center back, your third D mid, and your third or fourth right back as well. But again, it's the we're getting into the last guy on the roster essentially, which is a good thing because I think it speaks to the strength of this overall roster. Like. It feels good to look at this depth chart and see, you know, at least nine places where it's unambiguous that we have our best guys fit. Now the two questions are obviously center forward, where I do expect it to be something of an open competition between Ferreira and Sargent and Wright, and hopefully one of them comes to training red hot and, you know, makes the case for it, and left center back. Now, I suspect that Aaron Long is going to be the starter in Qatar. Berhalter has always rated him. He brought him into the national team during qualifying before he was even healed from tearing his Achilles heel. That tells you that a coach rates a guy both for his on-field and for his off-field thing. So I think Long will probably be the choice. But you can't really rule out Ream, given what he has done with Fulham this year and given the point Charlie made about if you're going to sit deep and you're going to counterattack. And I think there is a good chance that that's what we're going to see out of this. Ream's ability in distribution, that can be a real kind of a devastating weapon.
The chat says, do you think Ronaldo or Messi have vibe guys in their teams? And Dani Alves is in Brazil. So, yes.
Yeah.
It's a 26-man roster, people.
But that's Brazil. So, Ronaldo and Messi in Portugal and
fine,
Argentina.
Yeah, but I was going with the most noteworthy vibe guy in the world. By the way, Charlie's phone has been flying.
Wow.
I'm surprised. Between the sirens and your phone, but I'm surprised your desk hasn't moved, Charlie, the amount of vibration that's been happening on top of it.
Yeah,
you got to bolt that thing down to the floor, man. Everybody's got thoughts.
Everybody's hitting me up about the roster.
What are they saying? What is it? You don't have to name names, obviously, mm-hmm. but what's the prevailing thought in your
So there's a couple things. One is the Zach Steffen omission from the roster. He's healthy. So what is it exactly that happened? What was the moment that Greg Berhalter said, you know what, if he's not going to be the one, if I'm leaning towards Matt Turner, maybe he has an issue with that, and I can't go to Qatar with that if that's going to be kind of the cloud over the team. If that's the case, okay, I understand. And for me, I think that's the only reason why you wouldn't bring him, as if Zach Steffen just wasn't happy with being the number two, considering he's saying, hey, I made the move to Middlesbrough. You wanted me to get a loan. I did that. You know, there were some stumbling blocks, but I'm playing every week. So now why am I not your number one? You told me I'd, you know, maybe there was that conversation of, if I'm playing every week, I'm your guy. And all of a sudden, you know, he went with Matt Turner, who's not playing consistently with Arsenal, but has developed quite a bit under Arteta and has had some good performances in Europa League. But then Zach Steffen, his argument would be, I could have stayed at Manchester City and done the same thing, you know? So that could be something, but a lot of people are surprised that Paul Arriola is not in this roster, just because Paul Arriola has always been along the way.
I'm going to interrupt. If you have Aaronson healthy, Arriola becomes redundant. And that's really tough to say about Paul Arriola, who had a great season, who was, I think, really good for the U.S. in qualifying. Mm-hmm. But Aaronson is your sub all across that, you know, the three line of, if you're going to play a 4-2-3-1, and he does the same things that Arriola does.
Shaq Moore, not redundancy?
I mean, that's fair, but I was thinking more in terms of Jordan Morris as the final winger, right? If you're flipping a coin between Morris and Arriola for the final winger spot, and you already have Aaronson there, then you take Morris, because Morris is a different profile in terms of what he brings to the team, up to and including putting the ball in the back of the net. Because you remember, even as recently as the Nations League this summer, that 1-1 draw in El Salvador, it was Morris who put the ball in the net for the U.S. team, and he does it on set pieces. And guys, we've seen it throughout World Cup after World Cup, through tournament after tournament, including MLS Cup playoffs, right? Which is just a tournament, right? Set pieces play an outsized role in tournament play. So bringing your final spot, your breaking case of emergency winger spot, bringing the guy who's better getting on the end of set pieces, it's tough on Paul Arriola, but I understand that from Greg Berhalter, 100%.
And then I would add, you know, no Tillman. I think people really thought he was going, considering he's playing for Rangers and playing Champions League, getting matches. No PFOC, even though I think also Haji Wright is a surprise. I don't think anyone saw that coming out of left field. And no Ricardo Pepi. A lot of people are completely shocked, including myself, that he's not on this 26-man roster.
The point I'll make about Pepi, and I'm really glad that he's scoring in the Netherlands. His frame still has not filled out. And mm-hmm. we saw that limit him as World Cup qualifying went on. And it certainly limited him, in the Bundesliga. Now he's putting the ball in the back of the net in the Netherlands, but, if you're playing in the Netherlands, you damn well better put the ball in the back of the net. Cause that's what that league is made for. You compare him and Haji Wright, they're kind of similar in that they're more slashers than they are target players. But Haji's a grown man. He's 24 years old. He's doing it in what I think is a better league than the Eredivisie. Well, not at the top, but the rest outside the top three or four teams, the Turkish league is better than the Eredivisie. So I take Berhalter at his word when it comes down to form, and Haji Wright earning it with what he's done for his club team, even if that ends up being tough on Ricardo Pepi. I don't want Ricardo Pepi going into a game and trying to hold the ball up or beat center backs for England or Iran or Wales off the dribble. He can't do that. Like he played against that caliber of player in the Bundesliga for a year and he scored zero goals. Yeah, it's just not – he's just not ready yet. And I know this is rough on the kid, given all that he did during qualifying. But, like, he had two good games, man, and then he had a lot that were less good. So I get it. I really do.
Long and Zimmerman. Is that – that's it, huh? That's the pairing.
That's what I think. I don't know if Charlie feels the same
way. Yeah, I can't – I struggle to see a reality in which that isn't the pairing.
I agree. I think just with the options, I don't see Cameron Carter-Vickers partnering with Zimmerman in that left center back spot. And Ream, considering that Greg is adamant on the high press and high lines, I don't see him starting the first game. Although Wales don't have a threat, because even Gareth Bale, if he was to play the nine, he's not running like he used to. We've seen that in MLS. He's not making those deep runs into the channel. He's not testing people with his speed. He's still gifted on the ball, gifted on set pieces, but he's not the player who's just going to be running in behind. So looking at that Wales game, even if you played a high line, I wouldn't be too worried with Tim Ream partnering Walker Zimmerman. And Tim Ream is in form compared to Aaron Long and Cameron Carter-Vickers. He's playing every week. He's playing phenomenal for Fulham. I mean, they do defend on top of their box, but he's playing super well. So I actually wouldn't have a problem. I'd probably prefer, actually, Ream starting alongside Zimmerman just because he's playing every week and he's playing against the best players in the world in the English Premier League. So given that he plays a lot of these players from Wales in the EPL and against England, you're going to probably drop deep. Against Iran, again, I don't think there's really any top threats when you play a high line. England, you're probably going to drop back and defend and look to counter, and that would fit Tim Ream. I mean, he plays against Harry Kane and Raheem Sterling and you know, that whole front three for England. So that would probably be my preferred back line, given the four players would be Ream and Zimmerman. I think there'd be a good partnership.
The other question that I've been kicking around in my head, and I think I threw together this graphic that we're using to illustrate the depth chart. I think I might have gotten it wrong in midfield. I think that we might see a double pivot. I think that if I had to draw this over again, I would drop Musa next to Adams and put McKennie as kind of a box arriving number 10. Berhalter toyed around with the double pivot during the window back in June against Morocco, Uruguay, and then the two Nations League games. The goal was to get Musa on the ball earlier in buildup because he's such a dynamic ball progressor, whereas Adams really struggles with that. He limited what the U.S. could do playing out of a 4-3-3 as a single pivot. And we actually see it with Leeds now, right? Because they play – Jesse has them playing a double pivot – and by putting another D mid next to Tyler Adams, you free him up to do more defensively than just sit in front of the back line and protect the center backs. You let him release early and snuff out counterattacks before they happen, win second balls higher up field, high press. The rub here is that Musa is 19 years old. And he's in his first year playing full time as a central midfielder. And against Morocco, especially, he had trouble recognizing when Tyler went. And then that would mean that Musa had to shift over. And suddenly you're not a box to box double pivot anymore. When your partner goes, you're a single pivot. You're the guy who's protecting the back line now. So there were some complications with that. But I kind of feel like that's the direction that we're headed with this, given that they listed Aronson as a midfielder. If he's playing in the midfield, he's only playing as a number 10. So you don't list him there if you're going to continue playing as a single pivot. So that's a wrinkle that I think that I'm not going to say I'm expecting it. No, I'm going to say I expect to see that wrinkle. I expect to see it more of a 4-2-3-1 than a 4-3-3.
I would love that wrinkle as well, Doyle. I love the idea of a double pivot, but I would flip it and have McKennie alongside Adams as the 2-6s because both of them aren't great building out of the back. But if they have each other, I think there'll be a better opportunity for them to have less pressure to play forward and allow Musa, who's more gifted in the attacking third than McKennie with the ball at his feet, to be able to evade players on the dribble, to pull them out. And that's when he can play those slip balls to Pulisic and Reyna, 1v1 situations, Ferreira, who pops up in the pockets. I would love Musa to be in that more advanced attacking midfield role because of his ability with the ball at his feet, where McKennie does not have that. He doesn't have the ability to beat people on the dribble. He's more of a late run in the box. Now, he can still make those late runs in the box as a deep six, playing alongside Adams, because he might have a little bit more freedom to go forward when Tyler Adams is alongside him. So I would love the double pivot, but I'd like to have Musa a little bit more in the advanced role since he's doing that for Valencia. And I think he's really developed over the past 6 months with Gattuso as a manager.
So we're looking at this depth chart, and I don't think we've really spelled it out for the people that are listening on the podcast. This is put together by Doyle. Doyle, is this for, you have it as a Qatar roster, is this more for Wales specifically, or just sort of first choice, this is it, doesn't matter the opponent?
This is just what I think.
Got it.
Berhalter's first choice. Okay. And we know that, like, the best, you know, the best laid plans of mice and men, right? Like, any of these guys could pick up an injury between now and then. Berhalter could decide that Weah has to. I personally would start Weah. I just think he has so much off the ball that actually balances the way the other guys play, but I don't know if Berhalter feels the same way. So this is just my hunch of who he sees as the number one choice in each of the 11 spots on the field.
So if you're listening to podcasts, that's Turner as the top goalkeeper. We understand he's hurt. He didn't play today for Arsenal, but he has time. He has 12 days. Full team will be together in Qatar on the 14th. Of course, others will arrive before that. Backline left to right for Doyle here. And again, this is, as we said, Doyle's sort of interpretation. Anthony Robinson, Jedi there at left back. Aaron Long, Zimmerman at center back. Serginho Dest at right back. Tyler Adams at defensive midfield. Musa, McKennie, TBD on shape. We just discussed that, but in the midfield. Pulisic on the left, Ferreira up top. Sargent and Wright competing for that spot. Seems to be pretty open at this point. And then Reyna or Weah on the right. Charlie, do you think this is the team that will face Wales?
I do think it is. I would like to see Ream starting alongside Zimmerman, but I think this is the team that starts. I think there's wiggle room depending on if McKennie is back to full health and can start that first game, because then I'd love to see Reyna in that position, in that attacking midfield, and then you can play with Musa deeper and have Reyna as more of that advanced attacking midfielder, and then you start Tim Weah down the right flank. But you have two great options in Brandon Aaronson and Gio Reyna, who can play the attacking role in midfield if McKennie's out. But ultimately, if everyone's fully healthy, Reyna was always the first choice in that right position. It wasn't until he got injured that Tim Weah kind of got his opportunity and ran with it. And he'll make that choice difficult. But since Gio Reyna's back to full health and feels like he's in good form right now, he has scored a couple goals with Dortmund over the past month. So I feel, Doyle, well done with this roster.
Chris, thanks, Chris 2008 on YouTube says Pepe and Areola are hurt, right? No, I don't believe they are, Chris.
Nope.
Areola is not hurt. Don't believe Pepe is either. It's strictly a form thing on this. So that's a big one.
Same thing with Stefan. Stefan actually played yesterday, pitched a shutout. Then he, I don't know if everybody saw it, but he like sat alone by himself on the field yesterday after, I think it was a 3-0 shutout win. And everybody's like, oh, I wonder what that's all about. I think we learned today what that was all about.
Absolutely. Who are the biggest snubs? You have Stefan's an obvious one. Pepe, I think those are like 1A and 1B.
Tillman. Yeah. Tillman probably would be the other one.
I don't put him anywhere near that level. I think Areola before Tillman.
Reggie Cannon seemed to be a guy, especially at that sort of like flex right back center back spot with these just four center backs. I mean, I guess if you're going to play that back three anyway, but maybe that rules a back three out.
It kind of feels like it, doesn't it?
Yeah. To not have that extra body in there, especially when we're saying about injuries and yellow card suspensions, that's where it's more likely to hurt you. The center back position. You know, outside of that, to be honest with you, I'm Mark McKenzie at center back, given the form that he has in Belgium. But it seems like, you know, it seemed like Greg had sort of like moved away from McKenzie, despite starting him in some very big games over the course of the last two or three years. Other guys we knew weren't going to be there. Georgie, Eric Williamson, Brandon Vasquez. I mean, he never gave Vasquez that shot.
Mm-hmm.
Outside of that, this isn't Jurgen leaving LD at home.
No, it's not. This isn't even Bob leaving Sasha at home in 2010. You know, when Sasha was, I think, the final guy off that roster. I guess maybe Stefan is kind of like the Sasha to Greg in terms of him being a cup, but like it makes you think back to the 90s when we'll say there was a personality conflict between Brad Friedel and Casey Keller when they were sort of both vying for the number one keeper job, and multiple coaches in a row were like, we kind of can't have these guys both on the same roster. I'm not saying that happened, but that would explain why Stefan's not on this roster after being ever present for Greg Berhalter ever since he took over in 2019.
By the way, Tim Ream hadn't tweeted since June 9th. Hops on Twitter just a little bit ago. Did I miss anything? Smirking emoji, American flag. He was ready. He was ready to fire that thing off. I don't. Anything else you guys feel strongly about here? As soon as I saw this roster, I was sort of like, yeah, makes sense. Cool.
Yeah.
Let's get to Wales. Like, I'm ready for this tournament to start. No doubt about it.
There's not a lot of controversy here, right? There's not a lot of, you know, pulling your hair out because this guy or that guy or the other guy. Like, I think Reggie Cannon is a little bit better than DeAndre Yedlin or Shaq Moore, but I like not to the point where I'm screaming about it on the show, because the margins are thin enough that it, you know, I could be wrong. I would like to see a true target forward in there for kitchen sink time. When, you know, every World Cup team at some point enters the tactics free zone where you're just trying to lump it into the box. And I think a 6'3" center forward like PFOC or Vasquez would make more sense because those guys are so strong and so good in the air. But like, I can live with Josh Sargent or Haji Wright maybe playing that role. It's a good roster, man.
By the way, Haji is 6'3". I'm just going to throw
it. Yeah, he's not very good in the air, though. He's got that Teal Bunbury syndrome.
He's got some recent header goals.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I'm just throwing it out there.
I'm just, beyond anything else, I'm just really happy that all these guys are healthy. I'll say it again. We never got to see this team on the field together in qualifying. Not even close to this team. And here they are. And 12 days away. And it looks like we're going to get our wish. And I can't wait to see them play.
Wales does have, you know, they have some players that can hurt you. I mean, obviously, Gareth Bale is the one that we just saw up close and personal. But, you know, Daniel James, you know, Brennan Johnson's got a couple goals in the Premier League. There's a number of Fulham and Nottingham Forest guys that are mixed into this. So those are going to be some familiar faces for those players that are in the Premier League right now. Their outside backs are getting a ton of time and are starters for their teams. They'll probably play with that three-man back line and two wing backs. That's what you expect, attack with three. What do you expect out of that first game from the U.S., Charlie? Not just tactically, but like, you know, Greg always likes to say, look, we need to find a way to play without fear. We need to be aggressive. It's like he's been trying to capture that side of this team in every big game they've had. And in some games he's seen it, you know, against Mexico in particular. And, you know, in the last window, we did not see that. So what do you expect from this team against Wales on November 21st? You're muted. But I'm sure that it was really a great point.
Yes, it was. I would say I'm hoping that they are playing with attacking freedom and creativity. That once the ball gets into the attacking half, we see a lot of combination play, guys like a Yunus Musa taking players on the dribble, combining, you know, just variation in the way they attack. Through balls, 1-2s, shots from distance, whipped in balls, early crosses, end line crosses, and just being effective on set pieces, dead balls. That's what I'm hoping for, how I think they play. I think it's going to be a little bit ugly in the first 15, 20 minutes. I don't think we're going to just come right out of the gate and try and play out of the back. I don't think that. I think they've learned a lot from the past two friendlies and just get into a groove with the World Cup. Don't come in and all of a sudden say, hey, we're going to dictate play and control the tempo. Get the nerves out, play a little bit more direct, be aggressive, push the lines high. I think dumping the balls in the channel, that's fine.
Yeah.
Get the lines up and then make them try and break you down. Make them try and be creative and try different things and be daring. Because if you can make Wales just play, you know, predictable and allow and make force them to try and build out of the back and keep the ball in the half and let them play passes back and forth with their center backs, we're in good shape.
Yeah.
So that's what I expect. And I hope that we build off of that, get into a rhythm with our attacking players, because that will set us up well for not only the England game, but the Iran game, when our players are all getting touches, feeling confident, and they've got the, you know, the whole World Cup vibes that have been making them so emotional, and, you know, the butterflies that are flowing through them. When all that calms down, then we'll can see the best version of this young U.S. men's national team, because they're going to be playing without fear. You know, the expectations that we've placed on them are like, yeah, get out of the group. I think the expectations they place on themselves, we're a bunch of badasses. We're young. Let's go out and do it and prove people wrong, because there are a lot of doubters. That's for sure. I'll be the first one to say I'm backing this team. I'm optimistic. I'm positive. But am I confident? Hell no, I'm not confident. But I am positive. I'm gonna be supporting them. But I really do hope that first game they set the tone, because once they do that, all the doubt's going to leave them. I think they're going to play with a lot of freedom, a lot of joy. We'll see them smiling and playing, and that's when they're at their best.
Yeah, I'll echo that. Just the first 20 minutes of the first game, I don't even care if they complete a pass. Just everything, make it about second balls and committing hard fouls in midfield. Let them know you're there. To borrow a line from Jesse Marsh, make them feel you. That's what I want to see from the first 20 minutes of the game. Then the soccer can happen after that, but like, set the physical tone and let it flow from that.
By the way, Jesse Marsh on Extra Time this week. We have an exclusive interview right here on the MLS YouTube page, as well as the Extra Time podcast. We're going to be with you throughout the tournament, covering the U.S., covering Canada, covering the tournament at large. MLS Today will transition into World Cup Today. We will have live watch-along shows. I think the Manning cast with some of us, but also some exclusive guests. Bruce Arena will be with us. You and I, Charlie, for U.S. Wales. Had a call with him the other day. That was interesting. He's excited, ready to go. Has some takes, no doubt about that. So we'll get to watch that Wales game with him. You can come watch with us on YouTube and Twitch as well, and we'll answer all your questions. You can ask Bruce just about anything. I may have to edit some of the things that the chat says. I monitor you guys. I've been watching. You've been beefing. You've been squabbling throughout this through this reaction right here. I will just sort of end this, unless you guys don't have another thought, by saying I am glad that the rigmarole is over. Uh-huh. You know, World Cup qualifying is thrilling. It's stressful. It's terrifying. We got through it. It's in the past. I honestly don't care what happened there anymore. Check the box. Once the box is checked, it's on to the next thing.
You're a box camp, checker. Okay.
I'm a box checker. I'm checking boxes. This last camp, scary. Not going to lie. Gave me a little bit of apprehension, some fear about what was to come at the World Cup. We're past that now. Doesn't matter anymore. The 26 are in. We can talk about snubs. We can talk about guys that aren't there. Doesn't matter. They're not there. These are the 26. I am ready for the first time in 8 years to sit down, well, to pace around, try to sit, and watch the U.S. try to capture our hearts on a world stage. And when they've done that in the past, it's been one of the most exhilarating sporting things I've ever experienced. I remember being in Kansas City at the Power and Light District with like 5,000 people when Landon scored that goal against Algeria.
Are you going to be Power and Light for Friday, Black Friday with England? set up your computer, get out there.
That's a really good way to need to get a new computer, Charlie. That's beer showers.
Oh, absolutely.
It's going to be a little chilly out there. Now, I'll probably
get a nice new Apple.
Sitting in my basement. I need the privacy. But like, I'm ready for this tournament to happen, to stop thinking about it, to stop analyzing it, to have the guys hit the field, to hear the national anthem, to get the buzz, to feel the goosebumps. And just let them go have their stage, because ultimately that's what it's about. We care about it, but it's their moment. It's these 26 guys moment. It's these young players moment. It's a turning of the page in U.S. soccer. And oh, by the way, it's probably going to be a very similar page with changes, chops and changes, of course, in 26 when they do it on our soil as well. Same thing goes for Canada. I'm just as excited to see them. They're in Bahrain right now getting ready. We see the chat saying, I miss Dempsey. I miss Jones. Yes, so do I. But you know where we learn to love them at a higher level than anybody else? The World freaking Cup. The World Cup. Like, this is where we make our legends. This is where the moments happen. This is where guys go from, oh, yeah, so-and-so, the soccer community knows, but, you know, the country, the world at large doesn't. This is where you make those stars. This is where you make those connections. This is where you learn to love somebody with all your heart because of what they do for the team that you love on a world stage, on the absolute biggest stage. So, yeah, I'm done with the rigmarole. I'm ready for it to start. Let's hear that whistle. Let's get in the stadium. Let's put it all on the line. You've got 270 minutes. That's it. 270 minutes. And Greg likes to talk about it as two tournaments. Well, let's get through that first tournament, please. Let's get through it. And even if they don't, they're going to be memorable moments. But I hope we do, and I hope we put ourselves in a position to see something special, to experience something special, and to prepare these guys. You know, who knows where it can go? But to prepare these guys to do something special on home soil in 2026. Any final thoughts? And we'll wrap this thing up. Big thank you to everybody hanging out with us on YouTube, all 500 of you along for the ride, and to everybody who listens to Extra Time as well. We got a ton of World Cup content coming. We're also going to talk MLS tomorrow in depth. We got the expansion draft on Friday, so don't think we're not going to hit all the transfer rumors and let Tom Boger come on and talk to you about Fafa Pico trades and $800,000 in allocation money that Nashville just scooped up via international roster spots. We got you on that. Any final thoughts, guys? Or are we going to call this thing good?
Let's call it good.
Let's call it good.
It's good. 12 days, Wales. That's how long we have to wait. Just 12 more sleeps, everybody. The roster's out. Full coverage, MLSsoccer.com. Subscribe to Extra Time anywhere you listen to podcasts. We will see you tomorrow on the pod. Enjoy your night. Adios. Mm-hmm.